Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Heretic Hammer Podcast. I am your host, Marshall, and this is my co-host, Dylan.
Hello, hello.
And, you know, once upon a time in the realm of Warhammer 40K, the Warp was once a tranquil realm. Until it wasn't, because all those dumbass Necrons waged war with the old ones, leading to the death of trillions of beings across the galaxy, and now it's a horrid mess of mind-bending madness loaded with demons that either want to bludgeon, fuck you, mind fuck you, or just load you up with disease.
Like you do.
Yeah, and then all of which to then kill you. And for some reason, the word bearers saw this and found it attractive and decided to hitch their wagons to it.
Like metaphorically or in like a literal sense?
Probably both. Okay. They probably have wagons to hitch to demons. And Slaanesh has them.
I don't know if there's any rivers to ford in the void, so I wasn't sure.
I mean, you know, Slaanesh has a wagon unit, so.
Damn.
Yeah. Or a chariot. Specifically, but granted, I've talked about how, you know, to the warped mind, you get it, a follower of chaos, you know, they will likely look to the positive sides of each of the chaos gods, right? Like when they are being influenced by the gods, right? They're utilizing their somewhat positive portions of their, you know, of what they stand for, you know. Slaanesh is just like, you want some of that good, you know, and then, you know, just the ancient kind of gives you like, oh, you want some magic powers? I can give you magic powers, you know, and like Nurgle and Khorne are a little bit simplistic in their kind of benefits, you know, honor, you know, the glory of battle. And then, you know, Nurgle is like a peace, right? You are at peace with your inevitable demise, right? It's like it's a more calm thing with his positivity. But you know, they don't claim to be the dark powers for no reason, you know? So we're today going to go over the demons of chaos by Pantheon. And while there are many aspects of them that cross over to fantasy, you know, Age of Sigmar, we're going to kind of stay in the frame of mind of Warhammer 40K when we think about the chaos gods and how they impact the universe. Also, this is like scratching the surface is an understatement. You know, the chaos demons are a great many and have so many facets. One thing we're not even going to talk about today, I'm just going to even get it out of the way, is we're not even going to have a real discussion at all about forge fiends, right? Or, you know, or demon engines. Sorry. Forge Fiends is a type of demon engine. We're not going to talk about any of those demon engines, right? Not a discussion even. Like, I will make reference to them maybe, like, at some point, especially when we get to a character. But, like, there are a number of characters as well that we will talk about. They have so much else to them. Not going deep on them. We have four gods and a number of demons that they have. And realistically, the chaos demons are technically infinite, right? Like a chaos demon of any of the gods could truly end up being anything, right? But there are a number of units that have, especially have models that get referenced frequently that we will talk about. Not going to talk about all of them, but the ones that are generally the most frequent and are the most notable. So if your favorite chaos demon unit is not in here, I'm sorry. It just got cut for time. That being said, let's talk about Khorne.
You know, Khorne?
Yeah. You know, we got, you know, you
the new
you
metal
put band? Your CD in and it starts going, yeah, the guy there, the god that starts going like
honestly, if I went through the void, I would talk like that when I came out of it. You know,
probably. I'm gonna be honest. I feel like a lot of world eaters probably sound just like that when they try yelling and screaming on the battlefield. No, the Blood Legions of Khorne are the demonic armies of the god of war and destruction, murder, you know, anything that involves death by combat, seeking only blood for the blood god and skulls for the skull throne.
Hey, I've heard that before.
Possibly one of the most ubiquitous phrases that, you know, like, you can know nothing about 40K, but you have heard that, right? And, yeah, you know, these are those demons that will do that. So, the first demon type we're going to talk about is the most common demon of Khorne you will find anywhere that there is demons of Khorne, and that are the Bloodletters. They are your pretty stereotypical demon devil looking creatures, right? They have the red skin, big horns, kind of, you know, Barbie tongue. They wield flame swords.
I can.
They look like devils, right? And that's kind of what they're meant to look like.
Sorry. Cool.
They almost exclusively, I'm gonna start over. So unless they are guided by a demon of higher intellect, they will pretty much just hurl themselves into battle. You'll kind of see this as well, that they're often led by something. So if you remember in the first Space Marine game, you were generally fighting these, and they pretty much just unga bunga their way to you, just go into melee combat. They care nothing for risks. Risks mean nothing. They have no concern of these types of things. Their thoughts are only to just go kill. And so Bloodletters almost exclusively wield blood-drinking blades called Hellblades. I know, fitting. And these blades present their one source of pleasure, with allowing them to hack into mortal flesh. They will often then be led by a greater demon of Khorne called a Bloodthirster, which we'll talk about in a second. Otherwise, they often will ride juggernauts into battle and are commonly the kind of, you know, like the cop to a canine attack dog. Use things called flesh hounds as their attack dogs. They absolutely have zero. There's no debate. Right. We live in a contemptuous world. There's no debate. They are using these dogs to attack anyone, regardless of innocence, because they are not innocent. They are bad and they want to kill. So speaking of those creatures then. So we'll start with the juggernauts. The juggernauts are the gifted mounts to the champions of Khorne, including some Bloodletters. They are generally kind of shaped a lot like rhinos. And they're these huge beasts made from living demonic metal. And you'll see them, even though and that's where you'll kind of see all this armor in there. They are not, you know, demon engines, but they, because they have the living metal and stuff, are in a sense close. But they are still technically just pure demons of Khorne. But there's not much else to them. They've got these blade horns, and they are the mounts to Bloodletters. That's about it. Pretty simple. Luckily, I started with Khorne, because Khorne's kind of the simplest out of all of them to get through his demons.
Yeah, no, pretty straightforward.
Yeah. It'll change. But next up are going to be the Flesh Hounds. They are monstrous and ferocious, vaguely canine creatures, notorious for their ability to track down their chosen prey by tracking the actual psychic spoor of their victims. So the like little essence that any psychic creature, especially obviously as humans, you know, will emit to not only the warp, but then existence itself. Because even if you're not a psyker, you still have some, your soul has a draw to the warp, right? And they can hone in on that. And so while they pretty much just exist for this thrill of the hunt and to kill, they will also often just be kind of sicked upon those who are weak or cowards in the face of battle. You know, if they see, you know, there's, especially in like a scenario where like some noble or maybe rebel leader, right, has pledged themselves to Khorne, and they have, and so these traitor guardsmen are going into battle, and they have the demons next to them, but the guardsmen are getting screwed up, and some of those guardsmen leave. Those bloodletters, they're gonna sick these creatures on those guardsmen. You do not run. So they will be used for not just their enemies, but the allies that they make that don't befit the will of Khorne. So then for the first greater demon that we're going to talk about today are the Bloodthirsters. So they are greater demons of Khorne and are often those who will champion the battles in the name of the Bloodguard. And will also be the ones that people will generally make deals with in relation to making a deal with Khorne.
When do they get to second grade?
What?
You said first grader demons?
Oh, my God. A little bit of a stretch on that.
This is the final one. The Heretic Hammer Podcast.
Oh, no. But they, so the Bloodthirsters wield generally a fiery whip and massive two-headed battle axe. They will generally appear as if they are wearing armor, and you know, they will have this kind of look. It's essentially the same kind of armor plating that would be, you know, on a Juggernaut and the like. You know, it's the biggest thing, obviously, because like one thing that's like important to think about with some of the ways that we think about Chaos Demons is, you know, inevitably demons and entities of the warp are just psychic energy, malicious psychic energy, but it's just like energy. So when you like, they have these physical forms in this realm, part of it is because a demon to exist outside of the warp must kind of come into the rules of like the material plane, if you will, right? And speaking D&D terms, you know, so these are still, one way or another, just bundles of energy. They form into things, though, that kind of befit to the mind of those who are fighting against them. So, like, sometimes it's kind of alluded to in some ways that, like, maybe one would look at a singular demon in two different ways. Though often it doesn't matter because it's just like, holy shit, it's a demon. Like, oh my God.
Right.
So they're usually like similar enough the way that they perceive themselves to like humans and stuff like that, that it doesn't really matter if like one thing is different because they care that it's just like, oh my God, this giant winged horde beast just appeared in front of me and is trying to kill me.
Yeah. Priorities and all that.
Yeah. So the armor, whether superficial or not, is just a, you know, it is a function to their design, really. But then there are two well-known Bloodthirsters of Khorne. The first, not like fully an issue, because it's, or like in a correct image. When I was trying to look him up, he just kind of seems to have like, I kind of found like a really old model, but then otherwise just like not any specific pictures of him. But that is Angrath. He's the current favored champion of Khorne. Get to why I said that in a second. Who has only been successfully summoned twice in the last 10,000 years to the mortal realm. And both times he essentially took a big W wherever he was summoned, just enacting countless tolls on any planet and really only then getting banished just from the lack of ability of being there. Like, man is the, you know, or demon ain't score no L's. But there's a demon that did, in fact, score a huge L. And that was Skarbrant. So he was once the favored. And he's absolutely the most well-known of the core of the greater demons of Khorne. And he was once the favored, you know, having received both of his axes, Slaughter and Carnage, which are imbued with the spirits of his defeated enemy. Yeah, I know, right? And however, you know, millions of years ago, he was kind of taunted and Zinj just like kept goading Scarbrand, you know, just kind of do more and more acts of destruction, you know, build him up. He's just like really gassing him up, like trying to get him into more and more and more and more fights until his rage grew so much that inevitably, again, somewhat with this little push from Tzeentch, he's kind of like, hey, I could probably hit Korn right now. I could take him out. I'm so juiced up. I'm gonna take him out. I will take his place. And he goes for this like the kill, and it's kind of like a shot to the back in a way too, which Korn hates, loathes that type of behavior in warfare. So, but he's just all juiced up and like, you know, he's getting baited by Tzeentch. And you know, Korn gets distracted for a second. Scarbrand goes for it, and while this strike, you know, would have been power enough to fell an entire army, Scarbrand only succeeded in opening a single chink in the armor of the Blood God. Like, he just essentially just like took this chip off of his armor plating. Korn, somewhat rightly so, was pretty pissed about that.
Okay.
It just snatched Scarbrand by the neck, choked him until all the vestiges of his personality and all thought and like just everything that made him this, you know, powerful demon effectively was taken from him, leaving only his rage behind. Mm. And then Korn hurled him just all through, like across the warp, just flung him. And he flew for 8 mortal days and nights, leaving a blazing trail of destruction across the realms of the gods. There's like some even denote that like this is what led to like certain like events in like the mortal realm of the time, right? That's like a very much conjecture theory kind of thing. But yeah, like just throughout the warp, there's just this like, for that like moment, there's just this blazing like line of him like just
star.
Yeah, just getting flung. And, you know, just carved out this massive canyon, tore his wings to shreds. And to him, then he realized, in a way, I mean, he didn't have this thought, but he was just, there was that realm of like, nah, you fucked up. Now I fucked up. But because he's only rage, now he just constantly is waging war across anywhere he goes, anywhere he gets summoned, anywhere he just exists, he happens to be at the time. He has ironically become the best servant of Korn he could have ever been, despite now being banished from Korn's domain, than as the loyal servant he once was. Because of just his pure rage and slaughter that he has brought to the god of war. And his model is a little sick, older. But yes, he still holds up pretty well. The wings are a great touch. You can do a lot of stuff with, you know, adding flame effects and stuff to the axes. You can kind of see it better on this model than the artwork I had, which was, I think, from Total War Warhammer 3, actually. Part of his, like, the vestige of his, like, face, like, he, like, shows, like, this white, like he has, like, a part of his, quote-unquote, skull showing as a result of said yeeting across the warp. You know, next we have to talk about Tzeentch. Or I want to talk about Tzeentch. And Tzeentch, as is sensible for the Lord of Change, or really the God of Change and sorcery and all things, You know, he not only has a lot of demon types out there, you know, but and a number of them being in usable in 40K, one of which that somewhat toes the line in the middle of somewhere is the Zangors. You know, many of us having played Space Marine 2, we've seen the Zangors in that game. We're not going to talk about them today. The main reason is because they really, because they're technically originally abhumans, they are a lot closer to the Thousand Sons than they are being just kind of like generic Zeench demons. Because they're technically not even like demons. They're still technically abhuman servants. So I felt like it would just be better to talk about them with the Thousand Sons, because they, their home world is the current new founded home world of the Thousand Sons, you know, since they had to find, you know, a whole new planet a new planet to call their own when, you know, theirs got destroyed by the Space Wolves.
Mm-hmm.
So the basic or the basis of the, you know, the armies of Zeench are known as the Scintillating Legions. And these hordes go to war with bizarre carnivals of magical violence, obliterating and mutating foes with magic. You know, they have a bunch of other names as well. They have the Conflagration Legion, which is around their Flamers units. Yeah. You know, or just like utilizing just like various demons in ways to just like make you second guess everything that they have. You know, there's a number of names and forces for Zeench, and they love to just kind of make you second guess everything, as is the way of Zeench. However, the most common of the Zeench demon is the horrors, but which come in pink, blue, and then like brimstone or yellow, as they'll also be called, because they're inherent, the models especially are meant to be inherently yellow. The pink and blue ones you will have seen in Bolt Gun. Pink horrors, sorry, are often seen kind of in fits of joy and laughter. You know, they will generally use psychic powers in combat, so they'll utilize, you know, warp flames or bolts of change, which will cause rapid mutation and other horrid things to other people. You know, they're like these like gleeful kind of imp creatures where they're like, haha, I'm gonna fuck with you. And then when they die, they then split into two blue horrors, which, you know, often then will kind of split off from that happy pink personality and become often one of sadness and whining. You will see a number of them utilize different, like, sometimes, like, their models will have a knife sometimes, or like in Bolt Gun, they'll run at you, you know, instead of shooting you all the time. They technically still can be sorcerers. I mean, the image I'm showing you right now is, what's the model called? Like the Scribes of Zeench, I think. Like they're just literally writing spells. They are the Shadow Wizard money gang. I mean, he's throwing like the almost kind of like the rock horns, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. They're not like just like emo knife wielders. You know, they still got some stuff that they could do, that they do, you know? But they are generally, though, especially more prone to just in fight with each other. Like, they'll just, like, think one of the pink, blue horrors next to them, like, got in their way or whatever, and they'll just, like, start futzing with each other. But then if you kill a blue horror, you will have the brimstone or yellow horrors come from them. And while these weren't in Bolt Gun, which I find interesting... They are, again, pretty simple in that they want, at this point, nothing but to just spread flames and burn all in existence. They are essentially Potobos from Mario. They are just pure flame demons that just run around and set things on fire.
Gotcha.
But at that point, they are also the weakest point, so therefore are somewhat the easiest to remove as long as you have enough firepower spread. The downs, or the tough part, especially from a lore part aspect, is that they are just fast, you know, because the smaller and smaller they get, the quicker and, you know, harder to hit they become. Another common sight from Bolt Gun is going to be the Zeench Screamers. Yeah. These are the manatee-shaped demons that will fly through their demonic powers, so it doesn't really matter if their planet is flyable or it has any sense for them to be able to fly in the air. They're just, you know, they're magical demons. They'll fly if they want. And are known, obviously, by name for their warp-powered shrieks that, you know, can just blow the mind of anybody who hears it, but also their powerful jaws, which are often used, especially in the warp, as they see, you know, ships travel through, they will try to target onto those ships and weaken parts of the ship and like burrow through it if they can find some way to get through the Geller fields that protect each of the ships from the warp energies themselves. You know, they're gonna kind of just try to like hone in and try to peck their way in, see if they can get the warp to, you know, make its way through. They also then are commonly hardened and turned into floating disc platforms by the many sorcerers of Zeench, including both Zangors and Thousand Suns, as seen again in Space Marine 2. We have our, you know, our main antagonist hop on a disc of Zeench when we meet him. Mm-hmm. And that is just a crusted up, hardened screamer. It's just like, ah, yes, you see, deep, I know you're
screamer.
Yeah, I know you're floating around there all, you know, having a good time. I want you to be my platform and just freeze. though next up we will have the Flamers of Zeench. Flamers excel at leading assaults on defensive positions because they could just kind of launch their flames over fortifications into the back lines, especially, you know, they are very effective, as their name would indicate, with their magical fire. And they have both their exalted flamers and the standard flamers. Exalted flamers often having, you know, much like many things in Zeench, very beak-like features in the front, but inherently it's Zeench. They will appear how they wish to appear in many aspects. They were a scourge for 9th edition Chaos players, specifically as like a army you would, you know, bring in as an ally. You would add a bunch of flamers and they had a really dumb data sheet that was like really overpowered.
Okay.
But they, you know, when they fling their flames, right, it will not just burn people to ashes, but will sometimes turn them into frozen crystal, or they can spray surprise enemies with an iridescent cascade of sweet tasting liquor. Always make you thinking. And then we can get into our second greater demon, which is the Lord of Change, frequently seen or used in a couple instances, you know, in Space Marine 2. With Lords of Change, they are essentially meant to be the showcase, the best of what Zeench has to offer as a, you know, especially which, you know, for models really stick with for whatever reason, Zinchu's love for birds, which he and I have in common. Because the Lord of Change is very much a giant bird man looking thing. And they, however, are powerful sorcerers and resourceful manipulators. You know, as they kind of make themselves look like these kind of omniscient beings, right? You know, and part of that is there's like a little bit of aspects to truth with this, right? Because they are able, they have the capacity to see into the near future. So, you know, when they are in, when they are fighting with an opponent, right? They are the whole reason that you have probably seen people like, you know, if they're like trying to critique Bolt Gun, you know, they were like, you know, it's like the, you know, this is a fun game. It's a booter shooter. It's really fun and everything like that. But like, there's no way this game is lore accurate because that's a fucking Lord of Change. And the reason that gets mentioned is because inherently they're supposed to be able to literally dodge every attack, and they will like matrix dodge their way through it because they know where the bullets are coming from. And thus it is said the only way a Lord of Change can be defeated is when it is part of Zinch's grand schemes and he tricks his greater demon by sending it false visions of the future. And thus they get shot because they think the bullet's going to go over here. But alas, Zinch tricked you and he wants you to be defeated now. So you get shot. And obviously any of that is conjecture, because whenever you talk anything Zinch, it is just like, you know, everything is the, you know, this, you know, I only speak truths and I only speak lies. Which one of us is telling the truth? You know, like that level type just shit. And speaking of that concept, Kairos Fate Weaver, the Oracle of Zinch, is the personal vizier of Zinch. He is a Lord of Change that is capable of seeing things hidden even from the gaze of his master. It, you know, is, you know, he, like, there is a list of like demons that the Grey Knights considered the most dangerous in existence. You know, he's on that list, and he is most likely very high on that list. He is part of the reason that Lorgar and Horus fell to chaos, because, especially Lorgar, because when Erebus kind of was trying to get Lorgar to, you know, like betray the Imperium, you know, like, hey, there are these gods, they want worship, we can worship them. But Lorgar is like, you know, he's got that, he's like, you know, he rubs his chin, he's like, I don't know, let me see what's a word, like, I hear what you're saying, but like, I would like to see, you know, I want to see what these gods, you know, how godly truly are these gods, right? And, you know, it's like this whole thing where he is talking through this voice of the Chaos Gods, which is this like woman on this planet. I think it was actually, I can't remember if it was Cadia or if it was, or like, or they just met there and then they went into the Eye of Terror. And it was because in the Eye of Terror and in that like section of the warp, there are planets there still, technically, that you can, if you were to go into it, physically land on. Because, like, the inside of the Eye of Terror is, like, meant to kind of be, like, this, like, mixed realm of the warp and reality, which makes it so it's supposed to be, like, more sensible that, like, the Chaos Space Marines went there and didn't, like, immediately just, like, explode and become only war demons, that they retain some of their humanity. But I can't remember if it was like they met on Cadia and then went to this planet, or if most of the stuff was done on this planet. Either way, Kairos was like kind of part of the thing of like, you know, yes, if you betray, you know, your father, like, you know, there will be a great upheaval. Yes. And like the concept again being where like one head speaks truth, the other head speaks lies. it is said that it is within this statement that both heads, this is the only time both heads spoke the truth. Right?
Oh.
It's like, which is like, all right. Yeah. Okay. Sure. Probably as quoted by Lorgar, guy who now simps the hell out of every chaos god.
Zero bias detected.
Yeah, exactly. So it is said, though, during the actual heresy, or it's not, it's said, it did happen. During the actual heresy, Kairos fought Lionel Johnson, who is then impaled through the heart, as the Primarch then remarked when he stabbed Kairos. Yeah, the Primarch remarked that he wondered if Fate Weaver saw that coming. Like, this is a demon that's whole thing is like, I see the future. I've been stabbed. Bet you didn't see that coming, bitch. Take cigarette.
Wow.
I like love and hate the lion, like the heresy lion. He's so good because of just like who he is, but like he's kind of a dick, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like he sticks to his guns. So funny. But honestly, Kairos's model is one of my favorites.
That's a cool mini for sure.
Yeah, he's just cool. And you know, I love that he's a giant bird.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, Nurgle's next, and it's about to get a little stinky in here.
Oh, no.
Better open a window. Oh, the pestilence got in. Now we die.
Locusts.
So Nurgle hosts a great many of lesser demons, and they, especially because, like, many of them are to serve the functions of suing plague and decay, you know, like you said, like a bunch of tiny locusts or whatever are going to be able to go off and, you know, consume and essentially kill things that will then so rot into, you know, like a planet or a city or whatever. Mm-hmm. So like some of these are called, like, there's bloat flies, which are these like kind of little bugs that will still like spew out disease and gross and dissolving acid to just, again, sow rot and plague into a world, to having other like mounts like battle flies and molluscoids, which are literally just giant slugs except gross.
Yeah.
And they are ridden into battle for their various purposes. However, one of the ones you'll see the most, because they're quite adored by the fan base, are the Nurglings. These cute little guys are truly filled with mischief. So they'll attack an enemy in just these big swarms. So they'll just mob over, you know, the enemies, scratching them down, just barfing and anything on them. And, you know, they will often follow in the shadow of different champions of Nurgle, whether this be, you know, the greater demons called the Great Unclean Ones, or even a number of Death Guard. My favorite depiction, actually, of a Nurgling is, I'm not going to get this, like, story, like, perfect, but you'll get the definite, like, most of it's there, where, like, this Death Guard Marine is, like, climbing up these steps. I can't remember if it's, like, in the warp or wherever, but, you know, and he's kind of questioning, like, have I made mistakes, right? Was this the right thing to do? You know, am I, like, because he, like, thinks on the fact that, like, you know, he feels this infection in his lungs that's filled with fluid, you know, his breathing is constantly labored, he's always slow, his, you know, the flesh of his body has become so swollen inside of his armor. And then, you know, it is during this reflection that he, like, looks down to this Nurgle in his arms, you know, he's that I like to think of him like carrying like a baby. and it just like looks at him, vomits on him, and then starts giggling. And then the Marine thanks Nurgle for this reminder of his gift. And then like moves on. And it's just so funny to me because, I mean, like, it's part of this thought because, like, some of it is, like, those who follow Nurgle no longer feel pain, right? Despite being these, like, diseased and horribly, you know, bloated and sickly beings. But just, like, this just, like, Nurgling is just being carried by a space marine. And it was just, it just goes, like, bleh. They're just funny. They're horrifying in their great many like literal ways, especially for like a lore concept, right? You think about being swarmed by these Nurglings, it would be terrifying. Like the orcs, right? Where it's like, you know, orcs do horrid things and they are like just horrific beings. But they get a lot of comic relief attached to them. Nurglings are very similar, but from like a semi-cute aspect. I mean, there's like the little Nurgling that's got like a Death Guard helmet on him. Like, well, what can't you love about that? But otherwise, the other common demon of Nurgle is a plague bearer. Essentially, these are basically just zombies. They are also referred to as the Tallymen of Nurgle. Some of them literally going through the battlefield solely counting the diseases that are being spread by Nurgle. So like they literally never stop counting.
Oh, interesting.
Otherwise, I mean, again, there are plague bearers. Technically poxwalkers are the actual zombie ones, though plague bearers are often much like zombies, though these ones is depicted here will actually carry weapons, where poxwalkers generally are going to be just normal zombie where they'll just like claw and bite at, you know, you. The if you watch Dark Tide, watch or play Dark Tide, right, the zombie creatures there are generally just poxwalkers. But again, those are like the humans who have been, you know, turned into things, right, where the plague bearers are the actual just demons. You know, they're so, but it's kind of from that, right? So, because these are especially the things that will create those poxwalkers. So, a single scratch from their rusted sword is sufficient enough to bestow the plague that will, you know, send its host into Nurgle's realm, you know, decaying them, turning them into poxwalkers, what have you. They also have special combat abilities that allow them to hurt enemies no matter how tough they are. You know, they will, it's that thing where they'll just kind of scratch it, right? It's that kind of like very classic, like zombie bite thing of like, you may be resilient in so many ways, but the second you get that bite goes in there, you're done. It's kind of similar in that realm. Plague bearers then will often then also kind of, they will fly on the plague drones, which again are kind of the big fly things, much like, you know, the Nurgling in the picture I had here is riding in a much bigger sense, though. We'll ride them into battle and essentially just like sow their horrid plague from the air, which is always fun. All right. And then we'll get into the great unclean ones. So these demons of Nurgle are, so with the other ones, with all the other greater demons, right, it's kind of said that like they're somewhat the visages of like what the demons want them to be. Well, with the great unclean ones, it's especially the sense where like the concept is that they are all like great unclean ones are meant to be recreations of Nurgle, right? Like they are meant to be pure reflections to the visage of Nurgle, right? Like, if Nurgle looks like something, it looks like a great unclean one. And thus, all great unclean ones generally look about the same. And we'll actually get that with one, the named great unclean one. And the difference of his kit and model is very funny. But they are obviously massively bloated. They carry plenty of disease. They will also carry a plague sword into battle, you know, and these blades, their blades are dipped in foul pus and contagion from the base of Nurgle's throne. They are close to Nurgle. And that's actually a big part of Nurgle, is that, you know, they all look at, you know, Nurgle, you know, as, you know, you'll see the common name will be Papa Nurgle, right? But they'll even look at him as, you know, the father Nurgle, the grandfather's gifts, like these are gifts from Nurgle. They have a very like familial and benevolent outlook on what they're doing, which is always very interesting. And thus, that's partly why then the great unclean ones are these facsimiles of Nurgle, because they are meant to be, you know, his design. And that's also why they always look so joyful, right? They're always smiling. Mm-hmm. They, you know, and that's why the Nurglings are always so giggly and seemingly so mischievous, you know, because to them, this is like a joy, right? There's actually, I don't have the picture here, but there's another big demon of Nurgle called the Beast of Nurgle. And, you know, if you play Dark Tide, it's this big worm-like creature. And the reality of it actually is it's very much like mentally, it is like a small puppy. And so when it attacks you, you know, because it's used to kind of get like in the realm of Nurgle, it kind of gets like it gets played with very roughly. And they're kind of mean to it, really, actually. They like, well, like, they'll kind of do like the thing like a horrid person would do to a, like an animal, where like they like tell it to go fetch or, you know, go to this thing and then abandon it.
Oh.
And so when a beast of Nurgle shows up in the, you know, in the mortal realm, they look at, you know, you and your band of space marines or guardsmen or whatever, it goes to you and like it'll try to bite and eat you and do whatever and sling slime at you. When it's doing all those things to it, it is playing with you. It's having fun with you.
Oh, right? Sure.
It's not thinking, I want to kill you because I want you dead. It's just like, this is how playing works. And so it will actually genuinely get, and so like when it's like abandoned or like if it kills everything, it gets really sad and it will go to this like swampy pit from the realm of Nurgle and then become like a greater version of a beast of Nurgle that is like just angry and ragey then. But like it's like kind of a sad demon. But like most other demons, but like on the face of the Beast of Nurgle, it's this like happy puppy dog, right? And that's a lot of aspects of Nurgle's demons, but especially even the great unclean ones. You know, they have these big smile, and they're these big chubby guys.
Mm-hmm.
A well-known great unclean one is that of Rodigus, who often causes repugnant plant life to spread about him in waves wherever he goes. He is so powerful that he doesn't carry any weapons, but instead just bears his gnarl rod, which is just gnarl this rod. Like curved cross-looking thing that he's holding. And he is covered in trophies and icons, which constantly rot and regenerate from a seed to like just further create more and more diseases. He also is able to manifest Nurgle's deluge, which is a rotten disease storm that eternally hovers over his mountainous form and unleashes a vile downpour that spreads the blessing of Nurgle to every far corner of the battlefield, just unleashing a ungodly disease storm. It's raining COVID, effectively, you know, like, Ugh. Yeah.
No, thank you.
Yeah. No, it's bad. His model's pretty cool, though. It's got a lot of detail.
Ooh.
That's very similar.
But the colors
It's like it's very similar to what the Great Unclean one has, but like you can definitely tell, obviously, like the head is very different, adding his gnarl rod, and he's got just like a little bit difference of like the stomach mouths and all that. Mm-hmm. But you know, it is a similar thing where oftentimes one of the things you can a lot of times get away with, and like we'll get to this a little bit more or get into somewhat of how the army works later, but like one of the funny things is like you can like run a bunch of great unclean ones, but then run Rodigus on top of that, right? Because Rodigus, you can only run one model of Rodigus, but if you wanted to, you could technically have four great unclean ones because one of them is Rodigus.
Oh.
And there's truth to that technically with every Chaos Demon, but it's technically feasible with the great unclean ones, because I can't remember if this changed in the last update, but like for a while they were like points costed pretty cheaply for what they are. So it was like actually feasible to do it.
Okay.
And not like have an actually bad army. Wouldn't be a good army, but it wouldn't be necessarily a bad one.
Gotcha.
But yeah, he's a large boy, and he loves Nurgle, and Nurgle loves him. But next we got the Demons of Slaanesh, our final Chaos God. And they are described as being elegant and eerily beautiful, agile and graceful, but also being cruel and violent to the extreme, as all things Slaanesh are, to the extreme. So you will a lot of times see that like Slaanesh demons, much like Khorne, are very melee focused. They really don't have ranged units. I don't even know if they have any, but I'm just going to be somewhat general enough in case they have like
one or two. Those anteater tongues in the background probably get a good range on them.
Yeah, but still technically melee because it's a tongue. Uh-huh. But they differ from the Demons of Khorne by they will absolutely be willing to backstab you, but then also the fact that they utilize speed and elegance for their melee rather than toughness and strength. You know, the conceptual like barbarian versus the dex fighter or the rogue, you know, or the ranger. And the first kind of demon is right here, which is the demonette. They are, again, described to be the disturbingly beautiful servant. They will often have kind of one feminine side and like one masculine side. So you'll see them often with like, you know, like essentially like a ladylike boob on one side and then a masculine ab on the other.
Oh, interesting.
That's actually technically a newer addition. In the like first versions of demonettes, they were like all very feminine, and then they like changed it to kind of be this like, you know, very ambiguous, like, you know, because the concept is right that like no matter what, they're gonna prey on your carnal desire, right? So if they want to appear feminine to you because that's what you're into, then they'll do that. If they want to appear masculine to you, then that's what they'll do. They will go to just what it is that fits your fancy to trick you then into a horrid and painful display of ecstasy. No, but then they also have
an incubus all in one.
Yeah, and they will often have these kind of very crab-like arms that they will use instead of hands. Yeah. But, and then there are the kind of step up for demonettes called the Heralds of Slaanesh. They're the more favored ones, so these are going to be ones that are, you know, Slaanesh's handmaidens and courtesans. You know, they are going to, you know, be the slightly more deadly ones, and they will ride the, you know, chariots into battle, which will be piloted by one of Slaanesh's fiends, or like, so instead of horses, right, piloted was wrong, but like driven with one of Slaanesh's steeds. One of the there's a couple of though like fiend-like creatures. So there is Slaanesh's fiends, which are the one of the weird tongue-like creatures, and you know these are kind of mixes of human and reptile, and like insect characteristics. They have these long, slender bodies covered with scales. They have their tails are whip-like. They have so. They will have the four legs. They will sometimes have humanoid feet. They will have the normal Slaaneshi claw-like arms. And while they kind of have these like bovine-like heads with horns, they have these the mouths with their long tongue, which is used for tasting the air and endowed with tasting the air endowed with a soporific substance that which induces a coma in those caressed by it.
How is that spelt? Sorry.
Soporific. Soporific.
Yeah, soporific or soporific. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, maybe soporific. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but like you smell it, causes a coma. And then, as someone mentioned, there are the steeds of Slaanesh, which have a similar design, but instead of being like offensive and having the like insect-like aspects, they retain a little bit more of like these like snake kind of like features, but still maybe like a like or even kind of lizardy. They honestly they look kind of like the creature that like they make the fart joke with Jar Jar Binks in episode one of Star Wars with.
You are so right. It immediately, as soon as you started saying that, I was like, yep, that's the one. The yeah. camel, the alien camels.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, and the demonettes will ride them into battle, put them in front of their chariots, what have you. And then, again, there are a number of different types and like functions that especially demonettes move into. They have one of the biggest body horror models in the 40K range with Slaanesh, where, you know, it's essentially like a demon of Slaanesh that turned a man's like parts of his muscle, skin and organs into a harp.
Fun.
Yeah, it's but like there's just so much to them. It's just this is like a good taster, if you will, with Slaanesh. But then because especially a lot of the times the things that especially steal the show with Slaanesh are their keepers of secrets. They are greater demons that have each a unique appearance, and it's they're said to have mirrored Slaanesh's mood at the time of creation. What constitutes a good or bad move? Mood? Who knows?
Yeah, I'm looking at this image and I'm like, is this happy? like, what color on the mood ring is this supposed to be?
Great question. Who knows? All we do know is that it was extreme.
Feels like a shaking the eight ball and getting a try again later type thing. Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing, right? They can go from like terrifyingly haunting to being almost human and bestial. They always almost are tall and lithe with these long claws and limbs. And in one way or another, will have like this kind of crown like, you know, appearance to their head, whether this be like a you know, very horned like design, or like we'll see with the character, the, you know, kind of just like this interesting hairdo. You know, there's various ways that they'll like kind of have, you know, their heads kind of to distinctify themselves as being like great beings. However, they are very vicious and, you know, fast-moving warriors. But these are also kind of a relatively small number of Slaanesh demons that will utilize spells, often for misdirection and mystification. They love to invade the thoughts of their enemies. So, like the mind battle, though, will be like they'll send them all these visions of glory. So, like, just like being like, look all the things you can do, look at all this good you'll do. So it, or all the money you'll get, or whatever, like whatever strokes their ego, right? And pushes them and gives them more and more of their inner desires, all the more and more lead them astray, you know? And then we had, we have the named greater demon Shalaxy Hellbane. He was created by Slaanesh to fight and defeat rival greater demons, hence why this image is him fighting a bloodthirster. because Slaanesh loves to just fuck with all of the other chaos gods, much like Tzeentch does too, but in a different way. Slaanesh loves to send Shalaxy to fight bloodthirsters specifically as well. And while Shalaxy has bested many of the most formidable adversaries in the galaxy, he has lost battles, which has made Slaanesh get very upset and kind of banish him to the side. But Shalaxy is currently actively trying to hunt and kill the Yennari, because Slaanesh is in fact threatened by the return of Yinead and has had a number of bouts with Yavrain. To varying degrees of unsuccess, because Yavrain's still alive. So it would only be a success if Yavrain died. But Shalaxy's model, honestly, is one of the coolest, especially in Slaanesh's range. I just think he has a really cool design. The Keeper of Secrets model as well, though, is still very good. But yeah, just a cool model, in my opinion. I do want to quickly talk, though, about the general concept of a demon prince. So, and these are going to be, you know, humans or honestly, even just demons, right? That one way or another grow through the ranks of whatever chaos god they are the servant to, right? And they are just going to be these incredibly powerful demons that will, you know, continue to move forward. So they are technically lesser than a greater demon, right? And that's why I said generally a demon prince is going to be, you know, a mortal, right? One who was once a mortal. Mm-hmm. But like many of those who are chaos space marines want to be demon princes, right? Most of the primarchs that are like the traitor primarchs are also greater demon or demons, not greater demons, demon princes. So, like I said, I believe that they are technically meant to be like a step below, right, the greater demon. But not many, there are not a whole like, as far as we know, warp things, but like not meant to be many greater demons. So, like, being a demon prince is, like, the best you can do from being, like, a mortal that became essentially a chaos demon, if you will, right? And so every god has them, and, you know, they are as they are. The reason I wanted to bring up the demon prince is because we need to talk about the first demon prince, and that is Bellicor. Yes, he was the first mortal to be elevated to demonhood by chaos. However, this would end up kind of ending up being a mistake, because while he was meant to be a servant of all four gods, so chaos undivided, chaos gods don't like remaining undivided. They are petty bitches. And so they just kept squabbling over him. And
I'm shocked.
Yeah, Bellicor then turned out to be pretty hard to tame. And so eventually the Chaos God just kind of gave up on trying to control him and just kind of made more and more of their own chaos demon princes and all that from, you know, but ones that are specific to them, you know. Bellacor, though, did not like this. He found himself to be jealous of all of those others. Anybody else who seems to gain a measurable favor of the dark gods, he will essentially try to find and kill out of almost pure jealousy. And thus is always also undermining the plans of many of the servants to chaos, to the chaos gods. It's just always fucking with shit. You know, he has helped and hindered both the Black Crusades of Abaddon of the Spoiler, and generally is just kind of a wild card at almost all times. Currently, his biggest beef is with another great demon called Vashtor, which we'll talk about in a second. But the, you know, he is obviously generally just very cool looking. But also, like, just if you want to, like, represent with your army or whatever, you know, being Chaos Undivided, then being a force that is led by Bellacor makes perfect sense, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, he has a lot more to him. Like, he can have his own episode probably, right? Much like our next demon. So we're just scratching the surface here, though.
Okay.
But next up is Vashtor the Archophane, otherwise Guy Who Wants to Be Chaos God Number 5.
Okay.
Some could say that about Bellacor.
Yeah.
And I think in AOS, that technically is more correct. I don't think that's as correct for 40K, but I can't remember where he's really standing right now. But Vashtor, 100% his goal, Chaos God Number 5. That's what he wants.
Okay.
He is a powerful demon. He is the ruler of the Forge of Souls, a forge, essentially just a forge in the warp that is used to not only create, you know, a bunch of demonic weaponry, but also the demon engines I somewhat referred to earlier. So machines encapsulated with demons and sent off to fight against those who are against chaos. So while Vashtor necessarily is a solo act, he gets away with it because he's the arms dealer of the warp, right? And, you know, much like the Imperium with the Mechanicus, you don't often try to fuck with the person who's giving you your weapons, because he very well could just turn those weapons on you. Now, if all four Chaos Gods were to try to get rid of them, could they do that? Absolutely. Will they ever do that? Mm-hmm. Probably not. They're too busy bickering with each other.
Yeah, they're not going to agree.
Now, it'd be like the worst, like, divorce, like, taking of stuff. Like, I want this. No, I want this. No, I want this. No, I want this.
Spreading out the Beanie Babies on the courtroom floor. Yeah. To decide who gets what.
Except they're like Chaos Space Marines.
Yeah.
You could take the Iron Warriors.
I'll let you have these Nurgles, but I want to have I'll give you three Nurgles, but you want the Flesh Hounds.
I want the Plague Burst Crawler, all right?
Yes. It's a collectible. It means a lot to me.
So that's generally, though, how he's kept himself kind of somewhat, I guess, safe in a way, you know. Okay. But he's obviously not defenseless, you know. He has a slew of techno demonic monstrosities at his disposal, and boy, on the tabletop has he continually been a great model but a disappointing data sheet. However, he is
a great model.
Yeah, it's very new. Vashtor is one of the, like, newest demonic introductions into 40K, which is a whole thing, because we'll get to in a second, because one of their first attempts to making a demon specifically for 40K. Did not go very well. But Vashtra looks awesome. He has a lot more to him as well. He, again, could have his own episode. But scratching the surface, he's kind of like the outside of the Iron Warriors, like the purporter for demon engines for especially the legions of Chaos Space Marines, especially the Black Legion. However, when it comes to tabletop, the Chaos Demons have kind of been in a strange spot for the, you know, especially with 9th and 10th. I think 8th, though, as well, they were a little weak, if I remember hearing correctly. So the thing about it, like with like 40K versus Age of Sigmar, right? Age of Sigmar treats all of the gods as their own army, right? So, you know, every army in the game has like a codex, like a rule book. And AOS treats it where it's like, you know, the armies of Nurgle, the armies of Slaanesh, the armies of Tzeentch, right? 40K just has Chaos Demons. So it puts them all in one book as one army. Now, many of people's hopes, and mine too, are that with the release of the Emperor's Children next year, is that GW will adopt this form of split codexing so that they'll just have a, you know, Tzeentch, Khorne, Nurgle, Slaanesh book, and that then they will essentially combine, you know, the Demons of Nurgle with the Death Guard, right? The Demons of Slaanesh with the Emperor's Children. Because, like, none of the four Chaos God Space Marine Legions have been released yet. So a lot of people are holding on to this hope. Because the issue of them as it stands is that they have this realm where the rules really want them to be this, you know, Bellicor undivided army. But the data sheets don't work with each other, right? So, like, the army rules of demons want them to be undivided. But the demons themselves don't, like, they will, Khorne demons will only work with Khorne demons, right? They will only have abilities that relate to other Khorne demons. You know what I mean? Like, they don't, like, the actual characters and demons themselves don't interact with other gods. It is only through the army rules. So they like live in this limbo, which generally is kind of what makes them tough to field as an army, because you could go mono god, but then you lose a bunch of their rules and benefits that they get from their detachment and army rule. So it's just kind of weird right now. Many people still like to have undivided armies. And there's a way to do that even in AOS, but it's not like the like it's always good to have more options, right, than less. And right now it feels like they have less. You know what I mean? Oh, where am I at? Sorry. However, one of the really big benefits to playing the Chaos Demons army is that you get to use them in both AOS and in 40K. Actually, the biggest benefit is if you get a small army for 40K, you'll have a full army for AOS because of the way the points work. But pretty much every Chaos Demon is usable in AOS. I'm sure there are versions and whatnots that are not. But generally, that is the case. And the reason I say that is actually like 90% of these demons you will buy in an AOS box.
I was like wondering about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Most of them are sold as an AOS model. And what they used to do is they would actually put both logos on the box.
Okay.
so that you knew it's compatible for both games. They do that still, but it's like on the back and stuff. But it just says like also compatible with 40K, Warhammer 40K.
Gotcha.
But I want to draw your attention at this image to one model in the back left of this image. See, there's a model that Games Workshop, they were like, we're going to make a 40K demon. And that would be the Soul Grinder.
Oh.
This fucking monstrosity of a model represents the one of the guardians of the forge. You know, of the Forge of Souls. And, you know, in a way are supposed to be Vashtor, one of Vashtor's main defenders. And this doofy looking ass is the model he gets.
No skin, all muscle.
Oh, it's just so
wild, bad. Wild West legs to boot.
And granted, so people have made, like, with just simple tweaks, right? Very simple tweaks. People have made this into a pretty good-looking model. And honestly, even with, like, the blue and kind of zinchy colors, even then, honestly, it looks better.
Yeah.
Just the artwork that they give you for it is so bad.
Yeah, I feel like the face really is kind of the big thing that needs to be changed here. It's
so funny because, like, you know, the sentiment is always that, like, you know, models have a golden angle. And so GW will make the primary image the golden angle of the model. This ain't it, Chief. This ain't it.
Mm-hmm.
But that'll do it for our kind of baseline discussion on the Demons of Chaos. Any questions on the amazing plethora that is Chaos Demons?
No, I think it feels like the type of thing, because I know with some of these, we definitely were just kind of scratching the surface on them. So,
yeah,
it's one of those things where it's like, I know we'll probably end up learning more about them some point in the future.
Sure, but if there's anything that draws a realm of confusion or immediate intrigue.
What is realistically actually fully stopping the Space Marine forces and the other forces of the world from, like, long-term either containing or isolating or defeating the Chaos Demons in a form? Is it a similar situation with the demons themselves where it's like because they can't work together in any meaningful capacity, it just prolongs their existence? Or like or is it just a more meta thing of like, well, we obviously need the stories to keep going so we can keep, you know, selling the product.
Oh, sure. Well, yeah, obviously,
I don't know if it's just like a mix of both there where it's like...
Yeah.
The people that aren't going to work with the Empire or with the Emperor's, you know, legions, like they're not going to work with them, period. And so there's always going to be this like division that prevents anyone from being able to fully unite and go against the Chaos Demons in one big role.
Yeah, because that's the funny thing. So like, because pre-Heresy, right... Chaos and the powers of Chaos were not nearly as prevalent in the Great Crusade. Like during the Great Crusade and the very beginnings of the Horus Heresy, you know, the itchings of Chaos were but small things, right? And even then, though, like, you know, all the four of the Chaos Gods had attained a fair bit of their power by then, but they knew the force that the Emperor, and especially because of the amount of psychic power that he had, that he was amassing. And that's why they sought to create the heresy, right? So that they could lead to the end of the Emperor's machinations and any things that he could be wishing to do. But it is somewhat similar. I mean, now that they are in this scenario where, you know, they have Chaos Space Marines, they have mortal followers. There's two main issues, and that's, yes, this fighting, right? The fighting that, you know, the all these Black Crusades that Abaddon keeps leading, you know, Magnus, you know, constantly futzing with stuff. And then also the fact that, like, they are, you know, that if humanity were to forge alliance with orcs, Tau, Eldar, Jakari, you know, Yanari, even Necrons, you know, like, they probably could destroy. They could probably find it. I mean, with Necron tech, they could probably destroy the warp or parts of the warp and chaos, right? Because, mm-hmm. like, the Necrons found, like, anti-chaos materials in Blackstone. But, again, they're not going to do that. So nothing is going to satiate that. And then the problem is every time you wage war, you know, anybody who dies goes into the warp. And thus their soul will likely then become another demon.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's lore aspects out there that allude to this aspect that the followers of the Emperor are currently, like, going into, like, a heaven, if you will, right? The warp is hell. There is the sentiment that those who are following the Emperor are actually going to, like, a heaven. They aren't going right to, like, every servant of the Emperor isn't going right to Chaos Gods. Now, obviously, this would somewhat lead into the sentiment also that, like, the Emperor is slowly becoming a real god. Some would say, like, he would become, like, an order god, right? But, you know, and in some respect, that if that were to happen, it would actually be much like Age of Sigmar, because that's kind of what happened, is that instead of alluding that Emperor Sigmar might be a god in AOS, they're like, he is a god now. And then when the world was destroyed, now he helped make this new one. So they could pull that kind of move with 40K, but until that time does happen or whatever, you know, one way or another, that warp is just getting flooded with more and more souls, right? And those souls will then become more demons. So they will almost always have this fighting force constantly pushing back on them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's tough, right? It's everything is going to do good to, like, stem that tide. But, like, this is a big reason why the Imperium is so interested in anything that's Blackstone related, because of its seemingly nullifying effects to chaos and the warp. Despite that, technically, a form of Blackstone created the giant hole in the galaxy called the Cicatrix Maledictum when Abaddon chucked it into Cadia. But that's a different story. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing, right? Yeah, it's somewhat similar to how chaos would likely have completely consumed the universe had it stopped infighting. If the beings of the mortal realms could stop infighting, they could potentially do something and hold back chaos. But they don't. Mm-hmm. You know? Just like the chaos gods don't, mortal beings don't. And so, yeah. And obviously, again, that is fitting to selling models and all that. But there is kind of the continual rumblings that there will be seemingly some type of paradigm shift. Will we get something AOS-like? Maybe. But for now, we are where we are. All right. But with that, we'll put a wrap on this episode. Thanks so much for watching. Next week, I've got something spicy brewing. Wink, wink.
Oh.
That's your hint.
Eyebrow wiggle.
Yeah. So we'll see you next week. It won't be a lore episode. That'll be the other hint. It's not a lore episode. Mm-hmm. In its sense. But yes, thank you so much for listening or watching. Make sure you do all the fun niceties on the YouTube. And, you know, hey, we're getting some good momentum here. Let's keep it going. Share this with a friend. You know, Let us know how you're liking the episodes. What are some episodes you'd like to see us do? Let us know in the comments below. Other than that, thank you so much. We'll see you next time.
Let us know if Vashtar should be allowed in the club.
Let us know in the comments if you think he should be in.
Let us know if you think
if
he should
AOS,
be out.
If AOS can put the Great Horned Rat as the fifth Chaos God, then 40K can make Vashtar the fifth Chaos God.
There you go.
Or just bring in the Great Horned Rat and add Skaven to 40K. I am also okay with this.
Mm-hmm.
See you next time.
All right. Goodbye.